Welcome to Love Amped, an exploration of healing others through healing ourselves. Check out loveamped.com for additional resources and support.
Hello, friends, and welcome back to Love Amped. I'm your host, Seth Pearson, and this week we're talking with the Karen McLellan, an absolute delight, a magical creature that just goes about blessing other people with her presence. Incredible. She has some amazing stories of how she does her inner work, and you guys are going to enjoy this. Oh, Karen!
Oh, Seth!
Karen, what the heck? What? Welcome!
Thank you for having me.
So,
my honor.
It's your first time being on a podcast.
Yes, absolutely.
And I think when I asked you if you wanted to be on the podcast, what was your response?
Yes.
Yes.
And I'm terrified.
And why were you terrified in that moment?
Because this seems like a pretty significant chunk of time to be communicating to you and to the world. And I think my gut knew that this was going to be an interesting conversation, and I totally have interesting things to say.
Yeah.
Not that that's the measure of value, but my ego was like, ooh, 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 scary. So, here we are still.
Great. And you're just taking it on.
Yes.
You're just approaching that fear. You're going 100 miles an hour into that fear, crashing through.
Absolutely. I thought about canceling on you like 6 times today.
Did you really?
Oh, absolutely.
Why? Wait, what was happening?
The little voice in my head saying like, oh, maybe the car appointment will go too long and I'll have to cancel. Yeah. Or I'll just be too tired and I'll have to cancel.
Yeah.
But no, I'm here and we're doing the thing.
Yeah. Why is accountability important?
I think just living in integrity with your word, but it's a whole lot easier also if you are showing up for other people. Because it can be too easy, I think, to make a promise to yourself and then kind of weasel your way out of it.
Yeah. When did you used to not hold your promises that you make to yourself?
I mean, I think that's still a continual process, a continual challenge. And part of that is realizing what promises to make. Because if you're making decisions or promises to yourself that are coming from external forces or that are leading you in a direction that you kind of know at your core isn't what you want to be doing, then of course those are going to be hard to keep.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And so when did you kind of stop making those promises that you didn't want to make?
I mean, I think the last few years have absolutely been transformational and have been an exponential kind of zooming from a place to in a direction that keeps changing and weaving. But certainly changing and weaving in a direction that feels like it's coming closer to my truth.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of trying to live according to other people's truths, or at least my idea of what their expectations are of me.
Yeah. And when you were living based off of other people's truth, what was kind of your ideal, like, life?
I mean, if we go, I don't know if it was ever ideal, but the life I was trying to live, zoom back to undergrad at Duke University, where I was in a sorority, wore pearl earrings every day, going to frat parties, which, like, no issue with that. But certainly was just trying to fit in as much as possible.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you go into a new environment when you're 18 and you just want to be liked. So you buy. And it's funny because, like, this outfit is way more aligned with what I probably would have worn, like, every day back at that era. I've got my Sperry's boat shoes that I've been wearing today. But, yeah, just not feeling a deep sense of self, like, feeling lost. And so grabbing on to the closest image of what I could be, which was the, you know, sorority type. Mm-hmm. Learned a lot through those years, definitely. And it's certainly a foundation for who I am today. But looking back, it's like, whoa! Who was that?
Who the heck was that?
Long, straight hair, pearl earrings, like the whole deal.
Yeah.
Not that the listeners can see what I look like now, but
exactly. Different. We got Karen with just the short, just pff, the hair shooting upwards into like brown into blonde, like awesome tips, just like bam.
It's all my energy just to the heavens.
Yeah, it's super sick. It looks great.
Thank you.
It looks great on you. And so like. Say when you were like 18, you were like looking, you're like grabbing onto like, oh, I'm creating my identity. I don't have this sense of self.
Mm-hmm.
What if you kept going back? Like, did you feel that in high school as well?
I don't remember feeling the same sort of existential angst, I guess, that I felt then in undergrad.
Yeah.
Had a really pretty idyllic childhood, and not that high school and middle school weren't without their awkwardness and kind of bumps, mm-hmm. but I don't remember really feeling like I was trying to grasp for anything.
Okay.
Just spent a lot of time like out at the barn riding horses, living my best life, you
cool.
know?
Yeah.
And surrounded, like lived in the same town my whole life. Same bedroom from when I was 0 to 18.
Wow.
So surrounded by comfort and family and friends that I'd known forever. And then flipping to moving across the country to an environment that was totally foreign.
Yeah.
So that definitely put a lot of pressure points that weren't there before.
I see. Yeah. It was like, oh, life's out here and I don't have, the training wheels are off and it's a lot.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And so like with comfort not being there, you were not just out of your comfort zone, you were nowhere near your comfort zone. And why do you think that's important?
To get outside of the comfort zone?
Mm-hmm.
Because that's where you learn. Not that you can't learn within your comfort zone. But I think the lessons are going to be much more slowly materializing and quite possibly never reach the depth of like personal growth that you could achieve when you throw yourself out into the unknown.
Yeah. And I'm guessing you're glad you've done so.
Oh, absolutely. There's certainly lots of challenges along the way, but I am grateful for all of the lessons.
Mm-hmm.
And that is one of the lessons, is that those challenging moments, I don't like to say bad moments. I mean,
yeah.
This,
yeah.
You know, this philosophy through Zendo Project, they're not bad. They're just challenging.
Yeah.
And there's a lesson in everything. Sometimes the lesson is don't do that thing again,
mm-hmm.
whatever that thing is. And that's a beautiful lesson in and of itself.
Yeah. And so in the last few years, you mentioned, I think you're one of the, you know, you're just one of those people that are mentioning like doing your work.
Mm-hmm.
Like you're doing the work on yourself. Where did you first hear that term?
Ooh, that's a good question. Probably a podcast of some sort or being immersed in the Om culture community here in Seattle. There are a lot of people doing the work and talking about doing the work. So it's certainly a familiar phrase to me now. I don't think that concept was really, or at least certainly not in that exact phrasing, on my radar pre-moving up to Seattle, which was about 4 years ago at this point. And since moving up here, have meandered into community and then found community that has then exploded into beautiful concentric overlapping circles that seem to cover all of Seattle increasingly further and further. And it's not just the ecstatic dance community, it's branches of that go, you know, all over.
Totally. It's really cool how we have a lot of overlapping stuff with, like, Conscious Crew and Burning Man and, like, Seattle Bouldering Project, Movement Community, Ecstatic Dance.
Mm-hmm.
How it's almost like these, do you feel as though this is it's like a community, it's like you have all of these, like, support systems, like, if you need them, like everyone's here to support each other and help you be the best, you know, you can be. And so, and going back to the work, how would you define the work to someone that has never heard that term before?
Examining what you're doing. Awareness, I think, is definitely the first step to doing the work. Of course, you're not supposed to use the work in the definition of the work, but, just taking time and giving space to go deeper into yourself, and do your best not to live on autopilot, to make decisions with intention, and also with loads of self-compassion and recognizing that we are all on our journey and comparison is really not a very useful tool most of the time. So taking inspiration and learning from the outside world, but ultimately knowing that your journey is your own journey.
Yeah. Wow. I love it. I've never asked anyone to define the work before, by the way. So that's pretty awesome. That's a great definition. And I remember when we kind of, I think you first mentioned it, Karen, you've done ayahuasca before.
Yes, I have.
And
that's what this tattoo is from.
That's what this tattoo is from that you've got.
I just got a month ago.
You just got it. Holy crap. That was the tattoo that we were talking about, right?
Mm-hmm. Oh, you were my, talk about accountability.
Whoa.
You were my accountability buddy that I chose in that moment. And you're the reason this actually, or one of them, you know.
Yeah.
Is actually on my body right now.
Oh my God.
I didn't even make that connection until just now.
What the heck? It looks great.
Thank you.
Oh my gosh. So did you visualize this, right?
So, and for the listeners who cannot see, I have kind of a mandala shape on my left forearm with a honeycomb in the center. During my ayahuasca experience a year-ish ago, a little over a year ago, I was in a really challenging chunk of time on the second night of two nights, and at that time was wearing a third eye pinecone necklace that had this honeycomb that glowed in the dark. And at one point, I had been wearing the necklace I wore it all the time, but, you know, all of the first night, all the second night, and hadn't really thought anything of it. But at one point during my shit, caught a glimpse of this glowing honeycomb and was able to use that to ground and center and be this literal beacon, because it was glowing, of breath, breathe, you'll get through this too shall pass. And so the following day, one of the people in our ayahuasca group was doing freehand henna, asking us about our experience, if there was anything that we wanted incorporated, any imagery. And I told her about my experience with the honeycomb. So she drew a really beautiful freehand mandala, the same location on the arm, with the honeycomb as the center. Going back to Seattle a few weeks later, got led also through some connections of this ayahuasca group to a specific artist in Cap Hill. Shout out to Sienna Coppa, true love.
What up?
She's phenomenal. And so got her card and had this idea that I was sitting on. And some of the waiting was trying to make sure this was something I actually wanted. It's a big step to go from one small, very hidden rib tattoo to a very large, colorful forearm piece. Mm. But I knew if I was going to get this tattoo, it needed to be that location on my body. Fast forward a year later, and it had popped up a few times in a kind of short span. And then was talking with you, Seth, at Ohm Culture for David's birthday, I believe.
I wasn't there for David's birthday. I think it was just a synthesis night. What do you think?
Mm-hmm. Not consequential to the story. I feel like it was perhaps a weekend, but unimportant to the story.
Maybe it was.
We were talking and ayahuasca got brought up.
Because I had just gotten back.
Yes.
From it. Yeah, that's right. It was like a week after. Yep.
So ayahuasca came up and I had this moment of, all right, Seth, you're my accountability buddy. I've just chosen you.
Yeah.
This has popped up for me too many times recently. It's been just about a year. It needs to happen. So I told you, I'm going to Facebook message you tomorrow saying that I've set up this tattoo consultation.
Yeah.
Woke up the next morning, had major regrets about telling you that.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Major's maybe too strong, but I was like, this is happening.
It's that moment.
Yeah. And went through with it.
Mm-hmm.
Again, moving into the fear.
Yep.
So set up that consult and let the artist, let Sienna Coppa do, like, I wanted to bring in that story and needed the honeycomb, but other than that, let her run free with her artistic interpretation.
Yeah.
So now here we are with pretty epic tattoo, if I do say so myself.
Freaking cool tattoo. And I'm guessing you're pretty happy you did it.
Oh, absolutely.
That's so awesome. So, when you were on ayahuasca, like, how does it help you grow and mature? Like, how does that work for you?
I definitely tapped into a lot of intense emotions in a wide variety of directions. The first night was just strong and like stoic almost through the whole thing. Got a reflection from someone else that they had looked over at one point and was just sitting up so straight and powerful. They saw me and immediately thought, like, Cleopatra, goddess.
Wow.
Like, just tapping into that energy. And I could feel that power, my own strength, this goddess energy. And also tapped into my very human insecurities and worries and fear. During the chunk of time on day two, where I say I was in my shit, I didn't necessarily feel high, Like, there wasn't any major visuals going on. Was very aware of being in the room. And was just, yeah, so deep in my ego's gunk. Like, in the gunk of being incredibly self-conscious. Where I was worried what other people in our ayahuasca group were thinking of me. Like, am I behaving weird? Even as other people are, you know, the contrast of holding so much space for everyone else, but not feeling, not being able to recognize the space that they were also holding for me in that moment. And yeah, just having this sense of deep, like, unrest and kind of like a low light reel of past events going through of, hey, remember this time you screwed up, whatever that might have meant. I don't remember what was specifically popping up for me at that time, other than it felt bad. But moving through that space felt cleansing. I've had other challenging psychedelic experiences that have almost left an emotional, like, energetic residue where afterwards it didn't feel like the challenge was for a purpose. It just felt like it was hard and it was hard and it was hard. And that was, like, creepy, and I didn't like that, and I don't see the lesson in it. It just didn't feel good. But this experience, specifically with ayahuasca, felt like I had worked through something. And I have, that's the only time so far that I have experienced ayahuasca. I'm definitely interested to step back into that space. I was talking with a friend this morning about, so I was like, oh no, my schedule's too busy. Oh wait, no, you just have to put the, like, make the effort, make the intention of choose that rather than a festival or rather than this other thing. But whenever I go to do Aya Next, if I was handed that cup and told, you're going right back into your shit, I would be not excited, but so okay with it.
Yeah.
Because it felt cathartic. It felt purposeful or useful.
Yeah. That's so great. It's amazing that you could, you do it multiple days in a row. Like, it's incredible how you can be in that intense space within yourself and be like, holy crap, like, this is a lot. Like, you wake up the next day and you're like, wow, I just did, like, that was powerful. Like, that we moved through things. And, you know, it's gonna be hard potentially again, but, like, let's do it. One more night.
Here we go. Let's go, like, deeper.
Like, let's keep going. Like, yeah, you just become, I don't know, just, it makes me feel very, like, very, like, unstoppable, pretty much. It's just like, yeah, I'm going to keep doing this, even though it's hard.
It's a warrior energy.
Yeah.
Almost. But needing also to approach it with that warrior energy and the gentle, the surrender of, I'm here, I'm strong, and my strength means that I'm ready to be broken down.
Yeah.
Which sounds kind of traumatic, but that's how it is.
That's like, what it is.
It's breaking down something. And sometimes what you need, what the medicine gives you, is, at least speaking to other people who have done Aya, is a blissful, you know, 6-8 hours because that is what you needed, was just to experience beauty and love and connection to yourself, or however the medicine talks to you.
Yeah.
And sometimes, even if that's what you want, you need something deeper.
Yep. So good. It's so good. And how did you even know to, like, try Aya in the first place?
It had been on my radar, I think, just from reading different, or being aware of different psychedelics, and ayahuasca generally becoming more popular, hearing about ayahuasca tourism, and yet it was never something that I was purposefully seeking out, until a friend came over to me at Om Culture, May or so of last year, and said, "Hey, there's going to be an Aya circle not too far from Seattle. There are a few spots left, and I think that I thought that it would might be something you're interested in."
Yeah.
No pressure, but here's the information. So I sat on it, and the timing worked out really well. I was working full-time as of May last year, and had, I don't know the exact order, if I had already decided and put in my notice to quit, or if it was just about that decision time, but left that job, had a few weeks off, and then went and did this Aya experience.
Wow.
So then had the space both before to prepare and the space afterwards to breathe and think about, like, the possibilities. I had no next move after that job, really.
Wow.
Was taking prerequisites for grad school, but didn't think that it was going to happen in 2018. So just was like, I need to leave this job. Yeah. It's time. I need to make space for the next thing.
Yep.
And definitely went in to the Aya experience kind of asking for, what is it? I didn't get the answer, but that was not what I needed, I don't think.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not that simple. Sometimes it is. Sometimes you might get this flash of inspiration of, oh, I need to do this thing.
Yep.
But oftentimes it's a little bit more meandering than that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And there's like, oh, well, you got to take care of this first.
Yeah. Like, you need to be this person before you can do whatever you are trying to do.
Yeah.
But first you need to work through some of your own stuff, or else you're going to come across those opportunities and not be ready.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Ooh, love it. And let's see. I mean, would you recommend it to everyone? Who would you recommend it to?
Definitely not to everyone. I think it could be somewhat of an easier or less jarring experience, I guess, if you do have previous experience with psychedelics, but I don't think that's a prerequisite. There were people in my circle that had never done a psychedelic before. I found them especially fascinating. I love to talk to people about what drew you to this circle.
Yeah.
Why now? Yeah. What are you looking to get out of this experience? I think to get really the most out of it, need to have at least some space, or be willing to create space to go into the experience with intention and to integrate afterwards. But I think most people would get something out of the experience.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly if you have any intense health conditions, talk to your healthcare practitioner first. But yeah, I think, like a lot of these healing modalities, you get more out of the experience the more you put in. I did some amount of dietary, like, restriction pre-experience. Next time I think I would like to do more, just as kind of a spiritual preparation, as well as trying to make sure your body is as happy and healthy and clean, for lack of a better word, yeah. I guess. You haven't been just eating fast food every day up until your experience. Because then the medicine has a whole lot of other, like, external gunk to work through.
Yeah.
It's probably going to come right back out.
Oh, yeah.
But I think doing due diligence and researching and really sitting and thinking about why you're drawn to this sort of experience is important, because it's a big undertaking,
mm-hmm.
energetically, financially, time, like, yeah. 2 days in a row is definitely the minimum. For me, next time I will hope to do 3 in a row, because I think it just mm-hmm. gets more potent mm-hmm. as your kind of defenses get worn down.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. So, oh, geez. Wow.
Mm-hmm.
That's great, man. Karen, do you love yourself?
Most days, yes.
Most days, yes. What's that? What's that percentage? How many days out of the week?
No, I have self-love every day. I think it can be buried under some gunk, in some moments more than others. But
mm-hmm.
yeah.
What is your gunk?
What is my gunk? Fear, definitely. Fear of rejection, I think, is one that plays out over and over. And fear of my own power, I think, plays into it as well. Like, success and stepping into the light is almost more scary sometimes than failing.
Yeah, right. Give yourself permission to be who you are.
Yeah, whatever that might look like.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to let go of past expectations, past stories, past versions of yourself, and say, thank you. Thank you for serving me in the way that you served me in those times, but this is who I am. This is what my soul is calling to do. Definitely been trying to listen more intensely to, like, you know, what experiences are really draining? What experiences do you leave energized?
Mm.
How can you do less of the previous and more of, you know, those experiences that leave you feeling vital
mm-hmm.
and joyful?
Yeah. Wow. And what are some experiences recently that you find that you are stepping into your power?
Right now.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah. Yeah.
Are you familiar with Daybreaker?
Daybreaker. Oh, I've heard of that. That is a dance?
Yeah. So Daybreaker is an early morning yoga / dance party experience.
Yeah.
So there's an hour of yoga or some other similar fitness, and then 2 hours of dancing on weekdays from 6 a.m. to 9 a.m. or on weekends from 9 a.m. to noon.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a sober event. You get kombucha, healthy snacks, and people show up. There's a theme every month, so people show up in costume, show up bright and early, ready to start their day with community movement, wellness. And so I've been volunteering with Daybreaker for the last year and a half or so, which mostly involves getting to greet people and hug them as they're coming in all sleepy-eyed to the event, which is so joyful.
Yes.
I mean, like, adult in a narwhal onesie coming up. Good morning. Would you like a hug? And getting to see the transformation on people's faces of at first maybe being a little taken aback of I've barely woken up, but yeah, thank you. I would love a hug.
Yeah.
So getting to transform people's energies. So our July event was Pride themed. June event, sorry, it was for Pride. And I got a message from Sarah Rose, the Seattle lead of Daybreaker, about a week before the event, saying that our closing performer had dropped out and did I have any ideas? And so these closing performances are showcasing local artists in a broad sense. There was a burlesque dance at one point, some like a short acting piece, a guided meditation, beatboxing, really just any creative performance that somebody wants to gift the community with. It's around 5 minutes or so. And when Sarah Rose asked, my first thought was, oh, this is the same weekend as Expansion Festival, just a festival that was thrown by, you know, Seattle home culture community. So most of the creative people that I know that would be able to step into this role are already booked. They're already, you know, they have this experience they're going to. But then I had the thought of, oh, I've been working on this song for the last like 6 months. And this is a piece called Can't Help But Fly by an artist called Climbing Poetry that I first heard at Om Culture during an ecstatic dance in January. And it immediately like spoke to me. So I spent, like, went home, listened to it on repeat, spent the next several months memorizing this song, interspersed spoken word and sung choruses. And it's all about love and not constraining love. So I had the thought pop up of, oh, am I really going to ask this? Hey, Sarah Rose, is polyamory too, like, out there of a concept for Daybreaker? She's like, I don't know. What do you have in mind? So I sent her this song. She loved it. And I said, I think I could perform that. So I ended up performing, and I did some, like, you know, group musical things when I was in elementary school or something, but have never done a solo performance. And so this, and it was very far outside of my realm of, far outside that comfort zone. But got up there at the end of our June event, and a cappella, whole room of people just sitting, very alive from dancing for 2 hours, very sober and present, all attention on me, performed this 4-minute song. And afterwards, like walking down the few steps from the stage, it's like, whoo, I might fall over. I'm shaking. It was.
Wow. Well done.
Yeah.
That's incredible. You probably just did not think that you were going to do that.
Oh, and
like earlier, like, no.
I had been feeling called to perform this song, but in my mind it was like, oh, we'll go to Stoneway Cafe for open mic where there are 10 people there and 6 of them are on their laptops not paying attention, you know, ease into it. I performed it once on a Instagram Live, which was my like first little baby step.
Yeah, yeah.
No one watched it, at least not live. People watched it afterwards, but yeah, prior to performing for Daybreaker, that week when I had committed myself, I performed it once for my mom. Mm-hmm. And that was the only buddy, like the only person, yeah.
Holy crap. So you got off the stage, you're like,
whoa. Yeah, I told the audience, I was like, I said yes, and I'm terrified. The only person I performed this to ever is my mom. And here we are. So let's do it. Let's say yes. Let's step into that fear.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Well done. And thanks. I'm sure, I mean, it just shows like you're ready for these next steps, these next moments, and continuing to step into power. Dang. That's well done. Congrats.
Thank you.
And it's like in so many other ways that you're also volunteering, like with Conscious Crew. You were also volunteering expansion as well, right? Like you're just taking on and helping out with the community, like vastly. And just imagine what you're gonna be doing in the next like 2 years.
It's unbelievably exciting.
Yeah, what the heck? And so like in going back to school, it sounds like, as well.
Yeah, I just finished my first year of my master's.
Oh my gosh, what are you getting a master's in?
Nutrition from Bastyr University up in Kenmore. Nice. Yeah, so I've got 1 year left, and then a 6 to 12 month internship to become a registered dietitian.
Holy crap. Mm-hmm. And how did you know you wanted to do that? Like, when did that pop in?
I've always been interested in health and wellness. And yet never really saw that as a career. It was not an option as a major or minor, as far as I'm aware, for my undergrad, like nutrition or exercise science. Ended up getting my undergrad in evolutionary anthropology, did a lot of primate research, was all set to be the next Jane Goodall. And after graduating, went to South Africa to do some field research on baboons, which was phenomenally interesting in a certain way, getting to just wander around. Wander makes it sound too passive. Chase a troop of baboons around a forest, essentially, and we're collecting all sorts of behavioral data, memorizing them by their ear shapes and tail shapes. And I realized that while interesting and while this sort of experience checked a lot of boxes of I enjoy being outdoors, enjoy being physically active, enjoy science, that I wanted to more directly help people, and that devoting my life and like the only real career path in that field is to get a PhD. So devoting like a huge chunk of time to this area of study didn't feel aligned. So I ended up coming back to the States and just was pretty lost for a while. It was in a lurch. I expected to be over there for a year. Ended up only being in South Africa for 3 months, came back and was totally lost of what to do, who I was, like, just, I was living back with my parents, unemployed, college degree, but, like, for what, you know? And ended up working in the grocery store for a while in the nutrition section. Thankfully, nice. I got placed there after building holiday fruit baskets for a month. That's how I got my in at Fred Meyer.
Heck yeah.
Was as the person up there making sure the oranges and the bananas and the pineapples are all arranged.
Yeah.
Which is exactly what I thought I would be doing with my Duke degree.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, after a chunk of time there, a friend knew I had a science background and said, hey, our lab is hiring. You should try to apply. So that's what led me up to Seattle, was getting a job at Fred Hutch, where I worked there for 3 years in the lab doing HIV vaccine research. It's primarily HIV. We also did a little bit of Ebola and malaria, which was fascinating.
Yeah.
And definitely had the potential to directly help people, but still just felt removed from, like, never felt totally passionate about being there. recognized it was a beautiful opportunity, and like our lab was on the cutting edge of all of these different sciences, and just was not feeling it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And this whole time, you know, back when I was unemployed at my parents' house, my mom kept saying, like, you should go to nutrition school. You should go to nutrition school. Like, you love this. You talk about it all the time. Like, you should go.
Yeah.
And of course, couldn't hear it. And just wasn't ready at that point. Fast forward 2 years or so into Fred Hutch, and started taking prereqs just to get the ball rolling, and had originally crossed Bastyr off my list. I was focusing really on UW, and had some realizations of just they're both excellent schools, both excellent programs, but being really aligned with Bastyr's whole foods, food as medicine, holistic perspective, while still being firmly ingrained in hard science and accredited through ADA, all of those things.
Mm-hmm.
Finally just got that ball rolling and had a spooky experience going to check in. I like went to Bastyr to check in with an advisor. At this point, didn't think I was going to be able to enter till fall of 2019, this year. Get onto campus, just, you know, cruising the hallway before my appointment, see a flyer on the wall. I'm like, oh, this is for like an entrepreneurial thing that Noe and Harmony, people who are part of Om Culture,
mm-hmm.
put on. Interesting. Went and looked closer. I was like, huh, that looks like the space that I went to their event in. Look closer. Hey, I'm on that poster.
What?
Look closer. Hey, I'm wearing the same outfit in that poster as I'm wearing today.
Well,
I had only been to one of their events. It was like 3 months in the past.
What?
It was just a spooky, like,
yeah.
Hey, all right, I'm listening, universe.
Uh-huh.
And yeah, to wrap up that meandering tale of the past few years, ended up at Bastyr and had an advisor tell me, all right, if you take microbiology in the next 2 months, you can enter in 2019 or 2018. You gotta get it done. Get your application started right now.
Yeah.
So the next day I signed up for microbiology, shot some letters to my references, and said, I'm so sorry. I know this is awful, but can you get me a letter of recommendation in 2 weeks? And
like, why are you doing this to me?
Yeah. Very much was unwilling to shift my summer plans of Burning Man, Shambhala, a running relay down a bend.
Yeah.
So made it work. Finishing all of that in time for school to start. Which is also my ethos of, or how I try to approach school and life, of how can I have as much fun doing this as possible?
Mm-hmm.
How can I pack as many experiences in while still kicking ass at school?
Mm-hmm.
While still getting the things done?
Yep.
But also then doing all of these wild, like, fitting things in that should not be possible. Caffeine is part of the answer, but...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Wow. Living that full, colorful, like, just spiritually, like, oh, just ingrained, like... It seems like, Karen, you're alive.
I feel quite alive.
And that's beautiful. That's great. You've freed yourself. That's what it looks like to
mm-hmm.
me. And how does it feel to be free?
Pretty damn good. I mean, I think it's all a process, but knowing how I feel now, like, it makes me laugh. I'm 27. I'm not old by any means, but when people talk about getting older as if it's a bad thing, like, it only gets better.
Yeah.
And you obviously hit some point where you don't have the youth of your body anymore, but the experience and the feeling of letting go of so much of that bullshit and expectations, whether they're real or, you know, just forgetting what society is telling you and choosing your own path. And I think something critical within that, something that has absolutely allowed me to step into myself, is finding community. Like, community is the key to everything. Having that support system, being around like-minded people, having examples of other people who are living in ways that you want to live, so you don't just feel lost and like an outsider, or like what you're doing is super alternative. Like, find the people where you're all doing the alternative thing, and then it makes it feel normal.
Yeah.
Which I feel like I've, there's so much of that within the Seattle community.
Yeah.
And sometimes I have to take a step back and realize, like, whoa, we're in a bubble. This is a, this is a beautiful, beautiful bubble, but like, there is a, oh, there are a whole lot of opinions out there and a whole lot of people living in ways that are very different than we are, and that's okay, and that's beautiful, but just remembering that.
Totally. So we did strike gold with this bubble, though. Like,
let's, oh, hell yeah.
Like, how does this happen? Seattle, Washington, just right in this little area. Just people just everywhere. I feel just so lucky with all that.
Incredibly grateful.
Whoa. And what would you say is something that you would tell to someone that's having a hard time loving themselves, becoming, you know, freeing themselves, like potentially holding them back, holding themselves back from being alive?
I think acknowledging the challenge and just acknowledging that it's hard and that it's okay to be struggling with that. And just, I know I just talked about community, but like, find your people. You use the internet to find your people if you're in a space where they're not local. And I know now, like, it's way easier for me to say that and to imagine doing that in any place. But thinking back to the version of me who was living at home at 22 and was depressed, and I knew Portland was just a river away, but had no like oomph or vitality to be able to tap into that. And it was really hard. It was very challenging. Something that was helpful during that time was finding CrossFit, which was a blend of the magic and the healing power of physical activity and movement, and also finding that community. And having, the accountability, the place that you can show up and know you're going to see friendly faces of people that care about you. And just being patient too. Like, do the work, but be patient. Some days, some weeks, some months are harder or easier than others, and that's okay. There's some internet image that goes around where it's like, what you think success is going to be like. And it's a straight line. It's like, what success actually is. And you can, you know, put success, self-love, whatever that means to you. And, you know, what this path is actually like. It's like straight for a little bit, and then there's a cliff, and then there's a whole squiggly ball, and then you go really high, and then you crash down. And it's just, it's all over the place.
Yeah.
So learning, I think, to also just take things with a sense of humor as much as possible. And yeah, just tap as much as you can into, yeah, this sense of like groundedness, I guess, amidst what is inevitably going to be a whirlwind of a human existence, because that's what being a human is like.
Yeah.
It's beautiful, it's hard, it's all everything in between.
Yeah. Wow. Carrot. Holy shit. This is, check this out. I'm gonna do this thing. This is gonna be great. You're gonna like this. So I'm gonna pretend like I end the podcast here where I say, Carrot, thanks for being on the podcast. Holy shit, love you so much. I'm sad. Okay, bye. And then I press the button. So I just press the button.
Oh, you press the button.
And Karen, so you just faced another fear and you just fucking killed a podcast episode.
Murdered it with love.
Murdered it with absolute love and compassion. And how does that feel?
95% awesome. And 5%, there's still that little ego voice or whatever voice of, was all what you just said bullshit? Was it any good? I don't know. Are people going to like it? I don't know.
Yeah. And what are you going to say to that bullshit voice?
I appreciate you for trying to keep me safe, little voice. And you can sit with me, but you're going to have to be quiet, because I don't have time for you anymore.
That's what I'm talking about, Karen! Oh my god! And then this is when I really press the button. This is when I actually do it. Holy crap. Karen. Thanks for being on the freaking podcast!
Love, man. Karen, thank you so much for sharing your experiences and for doing the work on yourself. It's no easy task. Not in the slightest. So, thank you for listening, everyone, and check out loveamp.com for any more information on self-love and for scheduling a one-on-one self-love coaching session with myself. And until next time, love yourselves out there, everyone.
This was Love Amped, a podcast by Seth Pearson. Check out loveamped.com for more info on today's topic.